Peter Spurrier is at the door selling books, which are $120. And I actually thought we'll start right now with Graham, because tonight is fairly short. I think you get one free drink, okay? And after that, all the food you can eat. So I just want to invite Graham to say a few words, and then you've seen him, and you can then talk to him after he's said his few words. Graham is on a great trek in a very odd way. He started walking from Shanghai to Tibet in parts, and he will explain that. His walk is through a country that, when he first went there, and myself, when I first went there, you needed permits to go to certain areas. And I very well remember going to the local police station, or the public security, and requesting these permits, which I'm sure we've all kept because they're great souvenirs. Graham's going to talk about his book, himself, and China. And I welcome Graham.
Thank you, John, and thank you for coming to this event. It's a great pleasure to see you all here. It's also a pleasure to have this book actually exist. It involved more than 2,000 kilometers of walking and slogging across China, and it's nice to see something concrete resulting from all of the concrete that I've walked across. The reasons why I wrote the book are of some interest, I think. I wanted to I walk with a limp, as some of you may have seen, and I wanted to find myself a little project that would allow me to walk and gain exercise, because I think exercise is good. Repeat after me, exercise is good. Thank you. And I decided that as I can't run, I can certainly walk, and so I will walk and walk and walk. And I was following in the footsteps, as it were, of a man named Edwin Dingle, who wrote a book called Across China on Foot, although in my opinion he didn't walk across China on foot. He only walked across about half of it. He walked from Chongqing to the Burmese border in about the year 1910, and I felt that I could do better than that, and so I started walking one day in 2004 from Shanghai, and walked west and west and west, and I've now got to the Sichuan Basin. Every time I go out, I'm sorry?
Here.
Oh, there, oh, right. Every time I go out, I go back to the millimeter, to the last place that I stopped, and thereby can say that I have walked every step of the way from Shanghai to Sichuan, which is pretty cool. And I've seen many hundreds of villages and talked to many thousands of farmers and had my eyes bathe in the beauty of the mountains and the paddy fields particularly. It's rice planting season out there today at the moment, and the day glow green of paddy fields and the rice seedlings is something that you must allow your eyes to enjoy at some point in your lives. I've spent a lot of time over the past few decades pretending to be a China expert, and I have felt the need to gain an understanding of China that was somewhat different from that of other so-called China experts. And so I decided that walking through the villages and getting to know the farmers was something that would provide me with a unique angle in terms of being a China expert, and would provide me with credibility to pontificate even more than I was doing beforehand. And I think that that has actually worked quite well. And I find myself talking incredibly knowledgeably about China's rural situation, even though, of course, I've met only a few thousand farmers, and usually, most of the conversations that with them begin and end with, "Why aren't you in a car?" And of course, I reply, "Because I wanted to talk to you." So it was a challenging project, and it continues, because I decided that while I wanted to finish the book, and I did, and it's been published by Blacksmith Books here in Hong Kong, I did not wish to stop walking, because there is something wonderful about walking anywhere. It is a form of a holiday which I think should become much more widely known and used. Most people go on holiday and they get in a car or a train or a plane and they go to a specific place, and they then get out of the car, they go to the temple, they walk around the temple, they get back in the car and they go home again. It is too specific. What I do is I go to a random place on the planet and I walk in a certain direction and I stop at another random place, and everything that happens along the way is completely random, but it is real. And the people that I meet were not expecting to see me. The conversations that I have are completely spontaneous. And by walking, I enter the scene. In a way, I become a part of the scene in a way that in a car you will never be able to do. You are in a bubble as you walk, as you go there. So I would urge you all, when you have the chance, to go to a random place on the planet and start walking. It doesn't matter which direction you go, but just start walking and see what happens. Not knowing what is around the next corner is a wonderful state of mind to be in. So I don't have too many minutes here. I wanted to give you a few ideas of some of the things that I've learned from this little trip, and you'll find much more than this in the book, and I'm not going to bore you with a book reading, so please rest your hearts at ease. The first observation that I've made is that China has changed in positive ways, in just about all ways positive, over the past 30 years that I've known it. And to walk across China as I do now, without having to get the kind of permits and licenses and approvals that John referred to, is a celebration of the opening of China, of the positive changes that have taken place, particularly to the psychology of Chinese people over these last decades. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to see it, to be able to get a sense in terms of ordinary conversations with ordinary people about ordinary things. A situation that would have been impossible when I first went to China in 1979. Another observation is a negative one, though, and that is that the environment is under great threat in China. The changes, the last 30 years of economic development have had many negative elements as well as positive effects on China, and they really need to go out and pick up the garbage. Seriously. I'd say my last observation would be that we are all the same. It sounds like a crass cliche, but to be able to meet these old guys and grandmothers and kids in the middle of nowhere, in the most inaccessible places in China, and to say ni hao, and to begin a conversation, and to realize that in terms of fundamental mentality, in terms of body language, all of the little things of facial expressions and annoyance and joy and all of the little things, there is a commonality amongst all humanity, which is a wonderful thing to be able to experience and also to celebrate. So with that, I'd like to thank you again for being here. I hope you enjoy the one free drink, and for the sake of the FCC's finances, I hope that you would consider buying another one. Is that the right thing to say, John? Thank you very much.
I think all of us would like to say good luck. 8 minutes, well done. Very auspicious. And I think the book, I haven't read it, but I do know yet. But I do know that Graham will be writing something that you would probably see in China, which is Walking is Good. So please buy it. And there's a little gift, I think, courtesy of the FCC, and I hope it's a bag.
Right, I'm hoping for a safari jacket.
Yes.
Thanks, Brad. Please help yourself.
Thank you very much.
Another drink.
That would be fine,
yes.
Too.
Yeah.
Is it? Why don't you have a look? Just got a question. Right, in the front there. Do we have a microphone?
Fire away.
I'm Li Bo Liu, chief correspondent of VOA Chinese. Were you a reporter at the time when you did the walk? Did they know you were a reporter? And I am also wondering your physical condition. Did it give them a sense of safety or, you know, because you've been humble and all that? Would that help? Did that help you to get know the locals? Thanks.
Good questions. First question is, did I go in as a reporter? And the answer is no. I'm going as a curious and inquisitive human being. So I'm asking questions. I'm interested in your life. I'm interested in how the harvest is and where the kids are and questions like that. But I'm not asking, what is your opinion of the current policies and how do you feel about inflation and the price of pig meat? These are not the questions that I'm answering. But, you know, I think that most people go on holiday and sort of close off their minds. And I think that my little holidays out, why go once a month, are sort of the exact opposite. That is, my mind is more open when I'm out there on the road than normal. In terms of physical safety, I think was your question, on the road, you know, there are bad people everywhere and there are idiots and assholes everywhere too, and I've met my fair share of them. But most of the people I meet are really good people. And for the bad people who see me and think, hey, maybe this guy's got quite a lot of money in his pocket, I've already left. I've disappeared already around the next corner. And so there isn't really an opportunity for them to take action, which is good. I think, you know, in country areas, it's pretty difficult if you're a bad person to sort of stick around, because village life is so transparent. And if you're bad, you tend to go to Hong Kong.
Diana Williams, just an inveterate traveler. Where do you stay?
It's not a camping expedition, and I stay in the best local hotel. There's a driver who comes and picks me up at the end of the day, and we go to a place hopefully with good broadband internet access, but certainly hot water, and unfortunately no coffee.
Right. And how much longer do you plan to carry on traveling?
Well, my original plan was to walk, as the book says, from Shanghai to Tibet. The question of what defines Tibet is an issue that has exercised me for some time. I've decided to define Tibet as the first village to the west of Chengdu where I find people speaking Tibetan. At that point, I will declare victory, and I will hang a Louis, as we say in America, and walk south to the city of Guiyang, and then I will walk. I'll turn left again, and then I'll walk through Guizhou, Hunan, Jiangxi, and Fujian province to Fuzhou, where I will probably turn right and walk all the way down to Hong Kong. Hope to be here in time for afternoon tea.
Actually, I kind of had my question answered by this lady.
We'll ask another one.
I will ask another one. You spoke, of course, about the beauty and then, of course, of the the threats to the environment. But how did you deal with boredom? It couldn't have all been...
Boredom?
Boredom. Walking that kind
Let's
of distance.
See now.
You
okay.
don't run into everybody all the time.
Well, that's true. But there are 1.5 billion people or some number, choose a number... in China, and so there are very few places where you're not going to have somebody to talk to. Secondly, I have a camera with me, so I'm snapping shots along the way. Thirdly, I have an iPod with me and a little speaker. I don't use the headphones, but I have a little speaker. And I listen to, when I'm not listening to the, I listen to the birds a lot. The birds are great. But when it's, when the mood strikes me, I listen to Bob Dylan's Theme Time Radio Hour, which I highly recommend to all of you. And that's a great way to pass the time. I am never bored. I've never been bored on the road. My legs have hurt, but I've never been bored.
Any foreigner who spent any amount of time in China runs into the phenomenon of hearing the same questions over and over. Everyone you small villages ask the same 15 or 20 questions of the Lao'ai. And I'm sure you've had a lot of repetition in that regard, too.
Mm-hmm.
So what stands out as being different from those questions? You have a couple of anecdotes of questions from the farmers and people that you met that really stand out in your mind?
Well, one of the standard questions that I get asked when they say, where are you from? I say, I was born in England. And they say, opium wars. And I say, I would like to take this opportunity to formally, on behalf of my ancestors, apologize sincerely to the Chinese people. Sometimes I get a laugh out of that. Let's see, strange questions. You know, people ask.
When you were walking across, did you follow the Changjiang River? I forgot how you say in English.
You say the Yangtze River.
Yeah, Yangtze River.
That's right. There was a song.
Did you walk along that anywhere? Because absolutely, I lived in Wuhan for 2 years myself.
Along it, not on top of it. I followed the Yangtze River, but just to go back to, if I may, just back to your question, an unusual questions, quite a lot of questions in Anhui. I've got no idea why, but a lot of people in Anhui asked me what my religion was. And there is some connection between Anhui and spirituality, which I found very interesting. I got the interesting question when I was walking through the prison farm areas of the western Hubei plain by five different levels of policemen, up to the one where they were not wearing a uniform. What are you doing here? And I said, I'm walking to Tibet.
So,
you know, it took them 4 hours. A lot of looking at visas and stamps and things, but eventually they let me go because it was so weird as a reply that what can you do, you know? China is so much more open now. Every single encounter I've had with the police where, you know, even 10 years ago, it would have ended with them saying, get on the bus, go away. Every single one has ended with them saying, well, please continue. Which is extraordinary and wonderful. I was walking along the Yangtze River. The Yangtze River, Shanghai is at about the 31 north latitude. The Yangtze Gorges, the Three Gorges Dam, is at 30 degrees north. And Chengdu, which is my main aim in this walking west project, is on 29 degrees. So it's a straight line west, which is wonderful. If I kept going, I'd get to Marrakesh.
Graham, by coincidence, I just got back from Chongqing, and I was in the agricultural regions to the northeast. And, you know, you mentioned the rice. It's the rice transplanting season.
Yeah.
It is spectacular.
It's wonderful.
But one of the things that struck me there was in the villages, you have toddlers and grandpa and grandma.
Yeah.
The sort of younger and middle-aged people have gone to factories and construction jobs and so on. Did you notice the same thing in Anhui and Hubei and
everywhere? Yeah. Well, there's a whole generation that's missing from these villages, and the older people are still working in the fields, and the young kids are watching Tianjin satellite TV, crap TV dramas from Hong Kong and wherever, and they have no interest and no intention of working in the fields. And so these villages are at the end of hundreds and hundreds, thousands of years of existence. Within our lifetimes, I intend to live to at least 150, we are going to see the end of Chinese rural life as it has existed for eons. And that's pretty sad, but change is inevitable and it's going to happen. And these kids, once they get to a certain age, 15, 16, 17, are going to get on the bus and they're going to go to Shenzhen as well, and they're going to be working in the factories. And the future of these agricultural areas, I think for the plains, they should be turned into massive industrial agricultural operations like in Brazil or Kansas. And the mountain areas of China should be just closed down and turned into lungs or places where rich Chinese people, rich Shanghai people can have holiday homes.
What have you been most surprised by so far? Maybe more than one thing.
the incredibly bad dental care. One of the major changes that have taken place is the fact that with there's money in the villages now, and that means that there's little shops where people can buy stuff. And they sell basically three things. One is alcohol, the second is cigarettes, and the third is sweets, or as we say in American, candy. And the kids, they all have something sweet in their mouths all the time. And so their teeth are in just terrible shape. And I know about terrible teeth because I'm English. My route is just west, west, and further west at the moment. It's been very easy. People say, do you need a map? And I say, no, because I'm just going as west as I can. And I can follow myself, my route by, or I apologize, my route, according to the sun. But I also have a GPS, a global positioning system unit, which is amazing but addictive. If you look at that thing all the time as you walk, you are going to go crazy watching the numbers change. But it is incredibly useful in terms of pinpointing where you are, and particularly for me getting back to the right point, to the millimeter where I need to start, where I need to be in order to resume my walk. That's very, very useful. So, and Chinese maps are not very useful anyway.
But I would assume you're avoiding the major highways.
Yes, except in some areas there's no choice but to be on a main highway. I walk on the National Highway 318 for quite large sections. But you know, one of the huge advantages of China's economic development, the infrastructure development of the past few years, is that the former highway network has been returned to its former state of being ordinary little country roads, because all of the trucks and the big buses now are mostly on the Gaosu, on the freeways, and that means all these little former highways, which are now just little roads, are really walkable. It's really wonderful out there. So,
Graham, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And there's food to eat, please. And books to buy, $120, isn't it, Peter? Yeah.